Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and each week at this time, we talk to our friends at the Republican Party of New Mexico. Today, I have Rebecca Dow with me. Rebecca, how are you?
I'm doing great. Feels like the Christmas holidays. We got music playing and got some eggnog, wearing a warm sweater and enjoying the holiday season.
You're no longer representing the 38th District in the House of Representatives here in New Mexico. Tell us what happened.
Because of redistricting, I would have to move to continue representing District 38. So I'm not going to do that at the moment. And I'm very happy with my representative, Representative Gail Armstrong. We came in together as freshmen. So I decided to run for state party leadership as representation of CD2, where I live. And that is 17 of New Mexico's 33 counties. And it's a great opportunity to get out there, meet folks who share conservative values, register voters, talk to folks, engage folks who want to make positive change in New Mexico through platforms and opportunities that align with the Republican values and regardless of their voter registration, and just engage voters.
Okay, I think that's interesting. You didn't want to move after redistricting to keep your job that doesn't pay anything.
Well, not only does it not pay anything, it costs money to serve. It's such an honor. But I love my house. I grew up in TRC. Mm-hmm. My husband Aaron and I met at college. We moved back. I convinced him to move back here with me when I was 26. And we bought this house together and remodeled it slowly over the years. I mean, we knocked out walls and our kids helped us hang sheetrock and tape. And I really like my house, you know? So it's like, man, it's hard to move. So District 9 in the county of Sierra was absorbed into Representative Gail Armstrong's district. She now has the largest House seat in the entire United States.
Wow.
And if you want to talk about gerrymandering, it's gerrymandered. But she's a great rep, and I'm happy for her to represent me. And you do not need a title to make an impact in your community, to make an impact in your state. So, you know, I'm happy to serve in any capacity. House of Representatives was a volunteer capacity. CD2 vice chair is a volunteer capacity. And I feel like we have such a unique government structure. Our republic is unique to the entire world, and it is made up of we the people. So it works properly when we all engage in whatever way we can.
I want to play the speech you made to the Republican Party of New Mexico when you were running for CD2 vice chairwoman. You're talking to a group of all Republicans. And I want people to note, there's no talk of tearing things down or causing violence. You just want to make New Mexico a better place.
Aaron and I just celebrated our 30th wedding anniversary. My bodyguard over there, if you haven't met him. And the day we got married, we signed a government-recognized marriage certificate in front of our family and in front of our church. And we promised to care for each other, to raise our children, and to serve our community by loving our neighbor. And as I traveled across the state in the primary, I realized that those values that are shared by the Republican Party, a belief in church, a belief in family, and a belief in small government, is the value that's shared by our state. We are a purple state, probably red, if it weren't for gerrymandering and people in power grabbing for more. So I did not win the statewide race, but there's still work to be done. I'm not returning to the House of Representatives, but there's work to be done. So I signed up for CD2, pretty confident in election today. It's my first unopposed primary. Because CD2 has 17 counties, 17 important counties, full of leaders who are working very hard. So thank you. If you're in CD2, raise your hand. I know a lot of y'all, but yes, we can turn the state around. And we have to do it through a message that resonates with people who may not realize that they really should be registered with the Republican Party. I don't care what the registration is, but I want to work with each of you to set some goals for your counties. If you don't have them, if you do, let's reach your goals. And let's elect lawmakers, not lawmakers who separate our families, who shut down our communities and churches, and make government bigger. But let's elect lawmakers who reflect the values of the everyday New Mexican. Thank you.
It's interesting that you say what do Republicans say when they're talking to each other, and it's very difficult. I appreciate opportunities like this broadcast provides because it's very difficult for conservative voice to be heard. I think the research says that like over 90% of journalists give to Democrat candidates, and of course we're learning now just how censored and how edited when we have a country that believes in free speech, particularly people who call themselves journalism, how edited our voices are. And I know when I was caucus chair for the Republican minority in the House of Representatives, we do send op-eds, articles, letters to the press, and they will pick and choose which of those things they publish, print, tweet, put on Facebook. It's very difficult to get your voice out.
Yes, there are a few conservative talk show hosts, a few conservative TV news networks, but compare that to CBS, ABC, NBC, MSNBC, NPR, PBS. There are other voices.
Of course there are other voices, and those tend to be taxpayer funded. Just yesterday, I was at a committee meeting in Santa Fe, and there was a presentation on a department budget. The room filled up with people with the same t-shirt on, and Senator Munoz, who's actually a Democrat, the issue was childcare. And he said, raise your hand if you're in this room, because the room is full of people asking for expansion of free universal early childhood initiatives. And he said, raise your hand if you have a child who receives one of these benefits. Less than a dozen people of the packed room raised their hand. So I went over and asked, who is this group? Who are y'all? And it was a group that was receiving state funding to train people how to engage in the process. So they were literally being paid to testify on an issue that was important to whoever got the grant, taxpayer funds, to pay them. Sound like open and transparent government? Because the impression would be, these are people down the street that couldn't get to work today because they had no access to early care and education, when really we are funding some of the most broad programs there are.
Should there be personal responsibility? I mean, I know sometimes things happen in the fit of passion, but before you have five kids, I'm just picking five as a number, but do you think if you're going to have five kids that you should be able to afford it?
Our entire republic is based on the premise that individuals make up we the people, and collectively our number one role to preserve our republic and our freedoms and our constitution as we know it, our Bill of Rights, is personal responsibility and to engage in this process. So we have civic duties and responsibilities. We have personal duties and responsibilities. These things make up the American dream. I say this as what concerns me about the direction that our government is going and why I must stay engaged in the process is that solutions are local. Solutions are local. They start in a strong family. And they start in strong communities, and local elections matter. Who we choose for city and county commission, the churches we choose to be members of, the civic groups we join and participate in, solve problems. And the further away we get from local solutions and the bigger government that gets, the less effective I believe our republic will be.
I'm talking with Rebecca Dow, newly elected vice chairwoman of Congressional District 2 for the Republican Party of New Mexico. In just a moment, we'll talk about the upcoming legislative session on Inside New Mexico.
Attention, New Mexico veterans. If you were honorably discharged from the U.S. Armed Forces, you've earned state and federal benefits, and the New Mexico Department of Veteran Services is standing by to assist you. State benefits include a veteran's property tax exemption, education and training, and transportation services. We can also assist with claims for federal VA benefits. The state of New Mexico and this radio station thank you for your service. More information at nmveterans.org or 1-866-433-8387.
Thanks for staying with us on Inside New Mexico. I'm talking with the newly elected vice chairwoman for Congressional District 2 for the Republican Party of New Mexico, Rebecca Dow. And Rebecca, we have a legislative session coming up, as I'm sure you're aware. What do you think some of the big issues are going to be for 2023?
Well, I think one of the biggest issues is, how are we going to spend another surplus over last year's surplus of $3.6 billion, I believe? Mm-hmm. That is a direct result of inflation. So 2 years ago, eggs were $2 and the government got 8 cents on the dollar for $2. I had someone send me a picture yesterday, over $10 for a dozen eggs. These weren't fancy organic eggs. This is $10 for a dozen eggs, and now the government gets taxed on $10 for those same dozen eggs. So they are so flush with taxpayer money. We are overtaxed as a state already, and our governor, she gave this 1.5% temporary relief on GRT, called it a tax cut. It's like not even, it's like $20 per $1,000 you spend, and it was temporary. So they don't even know what to do with the money. The higher your gas price at the pump, the higher the tax you pay at the pump. So as a result of regulation that makes it harder to extract oil and gas prices are going higher and higher, and so is the tax on the oil and gas. So they don't even know what to do with all this money. So the budget is going to be a big deal. I know that if I had the opportunity to wave a wand and a bill that I introduced would be passed, I would be doing major infrastructure projects in every community. Probably a lot of folks, if you ask the local community, they've got to have running water. They've got to have safe roads. They want to be able to take their child to a library that is functioning and serves the community well. They want adequate law enforcement officers. They want a representation of EMTs and fire service. These are the things that government is supposed to do. We put so much money into public education and our kids' outcomes are worse than they were. We've put more money into child welfare. The child homicide has doubled since MLG's been in office. So money isn't always the solution. So the policies behind the money that will be spent matters.
Obviously, the budget is the first thing they always work on. What other bills do you see coming that might be good or might not be?
Well, I mean, when you have this big of a surplus, it is definitely time to do a bold tax reform package. We know that the tax package is broken in New Mexico. It's why we cannot attract business. It's why the Western states around us continue to grow in population and grow in wealth while we stay the poorest state in the nation. And it is because we have a flawed tax policy. It's acknowledged by both parties in both chambers. And we have bold, comprehensive tax reform package that would put us on par with the other states. It would eliminate the grocery tax seat, and it would replace it with a lower sales tax. We have to get rid of pyramid taxing, or we'll never have manufacturing in our state. We're taxing Social Security. That sunset needs to go away. We're taxing military income. That sunset needs to go away. Those need to be permanent. There's things we need to reform in the tax package, and the answer is always we can't afford it. Well, we have a $3.6 billion surplus over last year's surplus, our budget has almost doubled since I've been in office, and we need to have tax reform. Huge, huge deal that would create prosperity and wealth for New Mexico.
I saw Jason Harper from right here where I am in Rio Rancho had come up with what looked to me like a pretty good tax plan. I'm no expert, but he seemed to have a pretty good handle on it. What happened with that?
It did pass the House during my freshman year, I believe. Maybe it passed the House while I was serving and didn't get to a vote in the Senate. It's always had bipartisan sponsors, and there's usually a version in the House and the Senate, and there has to be a will of the lawmakers to do that. The problem is there's a whole bunch of lobbyists up in Santa Fe. They get a whole bunch of money, and they call our tax package a Swiss cheese tax policy because we're not being intentional about how to benefit everyone. So if I have a good enough lobbyist and I pay them enough money and they get enough votes to pass a bill, then my company can be exempt from tax, but not yours. So we have what they call carve outs and special interests. I mean, you got one industry getting a 35% tax credit. You have another industry with a 35% liability. And so to have a comprehensive tax reform requires everyone to have the same sales tax.
Yeah, flat tax.
It's a flat tax in order to be on par with the competitive economic environment of nearly every other state.
So when we see things come up like paid family and medical leave, which they did pass in Albuquerque, if that happens to the whole state and I'm a business looking to hire several thousand people and I'm thinking, do I want to go to New Mexico or do I want to go to a state that doesn't do that? Or maybe I want to offer it on my own, on my terms, as a business owner. When the state does something like that, I see that as a deterrent to businesses coming to the state and hiring more people.
Well, it probably wouldn't be if it was that on its own, but there are so many other anti-business policies, especially for small businesses and starting businesses. There's just no exception on this version of paid leave. And paid leave is very broad in this version that's being pushed this year. It's 12 weeks. We started off with paid maternity leave when there's a new child in the family, adopted or biological, which I think is great to include adopted. We need to do more for adoption. But this goes beyond that. It's any chronic illness. It's any sickness. It's chronic pain. It's if you're stalked, if there's domestic violence, if there is harassment. It's much broader than you think of. Family is a broad definition. And someone you identify as a family member, you would qualify for that. And it's not just the mom. It's the mom and dad or both parents. And so it's very broad. And they'll say, you know, the state's going to pay for it. Taxpayers are going to pay for it, not the employer. Most programs start that way, and then the burden moves to the employer. But the immediate impact on the small business, take a child care center. A child care center has a teacher take off. They have a small child who's sick. So this is annually 12 weeks. And during those 12 weeks, you would have to be replaced with a qualified sub. There is 6 weeks to get you qualified as a sub. And there are hundreds of hours of training that you have to have before you're allowed to be alone in a classroom. So the difficulty of replacing that person, if you're in a rural area, you have a small practice and there's two clinicians and a social work office. Behavioral health is a huge issue in our state. And one of those takes off for the 12 weeks because their spouse has a back injury and they're helping their spouse. Now, these are valid things to take off for, and you have paid sick leave, you've accumulated personal time off, but this is just automatically for everyone. Then do half of the people in New Mexico who need behavioral health no longer have behavioral health services? Because we are very, very short on behavioral health practitioners in our state. You can't just find someone to fill that slot. It's not that easy. There are real implications of these bills. You got small businesses that have been shuttered, restaurants, for example, shuttered. And if you were a bar, you didn't get made whole. You lost a lot of money. The average restaurant now has taken on during COVID over $150,000 in debt to have kept from closing. There's thousands and thousands of restaurants that closed forever. But if you stayed open, it took a lot of debt to keep paying the bills when you had no revenue. So now the refrigerator goes out. Look at the cost of food. They can't pass 100% of that on to their customers, or customers will eat at home instead of going out to eat. So their margin of profit has greatly reduced. And then now they have this new expense. And I'm sure there'll be a minimum wage increase too.
That will be going up to $12 an hour shortly.
But they won't. That's not enough. That bill always meant to go to 15. And now with inflation, they're talking about 20 or 25 an hour.
If raising the minimum wage really works, why don't we raise it to $50 an hour and make everybody rich?
Because inflation is a reality. There is a correlation between the cost of goods sold and the required minimum wage. That's a fact. And if anybody doesn't believe it's a fact, the government gave out money and the cost of goods went up. Minimum wage went up, the cost of goods went up. It's called inflation. It is a fact. There are some laws of nature and there are some things you cannot change. It's an economic law, and I haven't seen it avoided anywhere at any time.
I've always wondered why we don't let the free market work. Let's say I'm a restaurant and I want to get good people to work in my restaurant. I will offer sick leave. I will offer all these things. The government doesn't have to make me. And those that don't may not get as good a people or as loyal a people, but shouldn't it be up to the business owner? The government doesn't know how much profit I make or don't make, but yet they're forcing me to do this.
Well, this is what we talk about when we talk about personal responsibility, personal liberties, those freedoms that we have as individuals. And restaurants are a really good example. I go back to restaurants again. When they were trying to get rid of tipped wages and go to the same wage for all restaurant employees, the restaurants were showing up and opposing it, but the sponsors would say, we're doing this for your good. So when we see a bill, it'll tell us who opposes it and who supports it. They're always, well, this is for the good of small businesses. They'll be a better business if they treat their employees better. Well, tell that to the thousands of restaurants across the state when the governor decided they were incapable of having a safe environment, even though they're licensed by the environment department and they have to have food safety training and they have to have all kinds of inspections to make sure their environment's safe, and they knew how to keep their restaurant safe. How many of them went out of business because the government decided that we couldn't trust people, the everyday New Mexican, to care for themselves, their employees, or the public?
Yeah, they closed them without cause. There was never any proof that COVID existed in their restaurant, and they were closed anyway.
Correct.
I'm talking with the new CD2 vice chairwoman for the Republican Party of New Mexico. That's Rebecca Dow. In just a moment, we'll talk about gun bills that may come up in the upcoming legislative session on Inside New Mexico.
National Guard and Reserve members are true leaders, both in the military and in the workplace. They are highly skilled and get the job done every day. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, can help you recruit top-notch service members to your workforce. Hiring Guard and Reserve members is good for your business and good for your community. Visit esgr.mil/employers to learn more.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico as I continue my conversation with Rebecca Dow. She is the new CD2 vice chairwoman for the Republican Party of New Mexico. Rebecca, do you foresee another gun bill in this legislative session?
Yes, there are a lot of gun bills, a lot. There is a huge group funded by George Soros, Michael Bloomberg. Those people fill the chambers. They fill every committee hearing. And of course, there are incidents that happen with a firearm, but there are also incidents that happen with a cattle prod, with a knife, with a car, with all types of weapons. Anything can become a weapon if its intent is to harm. And so our Constitution and our Second Amendment gives us the right of law-abiding citizens to bear arms. And so, yeah, it's coming. We raise our hand when we get sworn into office and we swear to uphold the United States Constitution and the New Mexico Constitution. Both are very clear that law-abiding citizens have the right to bear arms without restriction. But they're coming. Yeah, it's coming. Well,
is there anything our listeners can do about this? And is there a conservative side that comes in and tries to stop these bills?
Even if there is, the dollars in this state for progressive agendas far, far, far outweighs the Republican dollars. And a lot of it's taxpayer funded. Like there's a, I think it was $15 million last year that was for anti-gun violence. And that sounds nice. Like don't use a gun to hurt people, but that's not what it was. It organizes people to fight for restriction on gun laws. It uses taxpayer dollars for gun buybacks, and those guns are taken out of circulation. And people would suggest that there should be no guns because we have military, but that's not what our Constitution says. And so our obligation is to uphold the Constitution. The question you asked was, how can they get involved or what do they want to do? Everyone should know the phone number for their state representative and for their senator. In addition to that, we have a website, nmlegis.gov, like nmlegis, New Mexico Legislature.gov, nmlegis.gov. And that lists all of the representatives by committee. And so there's Facebook pages that people can follow or groups that you can follow that will alert you to what's going on around pertinent issues. Now, I follow on Facebook, Save Our Western Way of Life, because it covers a lot of issues that I believe are unique to us as a rural state, but also as a Western state. We're one of a handful of states in the union where the majority of our land is owned by the federal government. That makes us a Western state. We're a border state. Because we're rural, we're a lot of farming, mining, and ranching. So I follow Save Our Western Way of Life, and they do action alerts on things like gun control. There's huge bills around farm bills this year around asking farmers not to use combustible engines on their vehicles. There's water right issues that are coming up. There's land use issues coming up. There's, of course, oil and gas. Anything that has to do with hunting, fishing, those sorts of things, I think Save Our Western Way of Life is a good one to follow. There's groups out there on a variety of topics. Child's First Network is another one that I like to follow. Theirs is around child welfare reform. They focus a lot on foster care if you're interested in well-being of children. So, I mean, there's groups that you can get involved with.
Oil and gas, you mentioned that. Every time it seems like they add taxes or regulations to the oil and gas industry, the oil and gas industry just passes that along, don't they? And like any business?
Yeah, they pass it along. And it's really a misnomer to say that, hey, there's all these permits that are pending and you can go drill a well. No, that's a misrepresentation of the truth. It's a half-truth, which is a whole lie. You cannot drill a well if you don't have anything to do with your produced water. So, hey, yeah, we handed you this permit, but it's one of 10 hoops you have to jump through before a barrel ever comes out of the ground. And so supply and demand drives up the cost, which is perfectly fine with this government because they get more tax dollars. The higher the price per barrel, the more money goes to their big government. And the harder it is for you to make ends meet, harder it is for you to heat your home in the winter, fill up a tank of gas, and have a quality of life. Oil and gas is part of nearly every product you see in your line of vision right now. From the cup on your kitchen table, to the TV that you're watching, to the phone in your hand, everything's made from a petroleum byproduct. And so it's so disingenuous to say, blame it on the big oil and gas corporations or even the small corporations. It's harder on them. They're going out of business left and right. And the bigger ones keep getting bigger, just like every other industry. But it's not as simple as, okay, there's your permit to drill. There's 10 other hoops to jump through, and those people don't return calls, slow walk the paperwork. I mean, there's just so much more to it than that.
Speaking of that, there's a big push to use electric vehicles. I see Domino's is now running a commercial, says nothing about their pizza, just says they're delivering them in electric vehicles. Okay, so when I buy a gallon of gas, I pay tax on it. That tax goes to repair the roads and the infrastructure and all those things. I buy an electric car, I'm getting away for free. I'm not contributing to the maintenance of the roads. Is there any legislation that may come to solve that problem?
I have not seen legislation to tax electric vehicles at this point. Right now, we are using taxpayer dollars to incentivize buying them. So right now, you get tax credits and tax incentives to use electric vehicles. In fact, there is a bill to put in electric charging stations, and that would require just to be able to implement small vehicles as electric only in New Mexico, which has passed through regulatory process. I think by, I don't remember the year, but it's quickly coming. We would need 850 charging stations just along our highways. They have no idea how they're going to charge the vehicles at apartment complexes. This is literally a huge endeavor with so much money. And then they put these conditions around who is eligible to install them. And I've noticed, and there is a correlation between how big your contributions are to Democrat elected officials and Democrat candidates, and whether you end up with some sort of sole source contract to be the person who installs the electric vehicle chargers, or gets the solar plant, or gets the hydrogen hub project, or I can go on and on, or gets the one of 15 licensures for the recreational marijuana process. It is such a dirty job. And you can tell that it's a dirty job because when they talk about, oh, it's this economic incentive, we are not creating wealth for families in New Mexico. If you have to rely on the government to make your ends meet, to feed your family, to turn on your utilities, to have a house, you're in poverty. because of bad regulation.
I'm talking with Rebecca Dow. She is the new vice chairwoman of Congressional District 2 for the Republican Party of New Mexico. And we're just getting started with this position, and we've got a whole bunch of people now in the Republican Party of New Mexico. Some have been there, like Steve Pierce. Some are new. So
yeah, well, for me, I always got involved in elections just by registering people to vote, helping a candidate with a parade, hosting a fundraiser in my community, and just encouraging people to vote. I never served in my county party, not even as a precinct chair. I go to the meetings sometimes, not very often, and had never been to the state party meetings when I decided to run for House. So then I served as a representative in the House of Representatives for three terms, was redistricted, ran for statewide office, came in second place in the run for primary for governor. And there's work to be done. So I'm excited about serving in this volunteer position and meeting the great people across CD2, the 17 counties of CD2.
And so if our listeners are wanting to get involved and they're in CD2, that's Congressional District 2 in New Mexico, they want to get involved in the Republican Party, maybe they'd like to see more wins in 2024, how would they get involved?
Yeah, anybody who wants to call and talk about conservative values, the values that I believe in, they are the institution of family, community, and in my case, church, I think has a role in shaping our worldview, and limited government, a government that is there to serve and protect you, but not to make decisions in your everyday life for you, for your children, for your home. So if you believe in limited government, consider reading the Republican Party platform and seeing if those values align with you. Take a look at the most current Democrat platform. Maybe those values aren't as aligned as they were for your parents and your grandparents. If anyone wants to get a hold of me, they can call me on my cell, 575-571-1056, or you can shoot me an email at rebecca@gopnm.org. You can also send me a message on Facebook. Just look me up, Rebecca Dow. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
Rebecca, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.